Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi everyone, and welcome to Pixels, a podcast for the discerning gamer. Hello everyone, and welcome back to Pixels, the show where we cover the video game news for the past couple of weeks, try to give it a little bit of an analysis spin. And today we're going to be talking about the news from BlizzCon, or rather commentary, because I'm sure by now everyone has heard everything there is to know about that. We'll talk about the Nintendo Direct, which is the first one that happened after the untimely death of Satoru Iwata, and we will talk about Activision Blizzard buying Candy Crush and a bunch of other things, including the games that came out in the past couple of weeks. My name is Patrick Beja, and before we start, and I introduce my co-host for the day, I just want to mention the fact that we're recording this show 2 or 3 days after the events in Paris. Obviously, most of you know that I am French and that I do live in Paris. I wasn't there at the time. I was in Helsinki for a couple of days, but obviously it was a trying time, and I'm not going to get into a lot of it. I just want to mention, I've been saying that on different podcasts, but just want to mention the fact that a lot of you guys listening who are regular listeners to the show sent some well wishes and some messages on Twitter and Facebook, and you know, and it did help a lot. You know, it made a little bit of light in this relatively dark few days. So I just wanted to take a moment and thank you everyone for doing that. It did count. It's not a meaningless gesture. It does help. So thank you so much for doing that and for sending the good thoughts. But we shouldn't let those people change us and change our everyday life. And this is why we're doing this show. We're going to be talking about video games and having fun because we can. So let's do that. And I'm getting to the introduction of my co-host, Ed Mitchell. How are you doing? You're back. Hi. After a couple of months. How have these couple of months been?
They've been good. I mean, actually, last night I first dove into Fallout 4 for the first time, so having a lot of fun with that, so I'm happy to be back.
Well, good. You'll be able to let us know what you think of the game. I haven't had time to dive into any of those games that have recently been released. I just ordered my Tomb Raider, my Rise of the Tomb Raider, but there, it's this time of the year where there are so many things coming out. That, you know, it's just so much fun that it's too much fun to take in at once. So
yeah, most of my friends on the website were like all into Fallout 4, but I decided to hold off a minute, and I played StarCraft 2 for the most of the week this week and finished that up. So
you finished the campaign?
Yeah, sure did.
Okay, cool. We'll talk about that too, I'm sure. I didn't even mention, but you're from the Four Players Network. You do some work for those guys there. Mm-hmm. So you guys know about games.
Sure do.
So we're going to be talking about BlizzCon. I think I've been playing a lot of Blizzard games, and we're going to get to that. Just want to ask, last time you were on, I basically raved about Destiny and couldn't stop talking about my love for the game. I've kept playing for a few weeks after that, and you know, it was occupying all of my time. I guess, got infected by my enthusiasm, as
you were not the only one who would have been waxed poetically about Destiny. and I went ahead and bought it on my Xbox, and I was playing it. I got up to about level 12 before I decided to kind of take a break again. I'm not sure that the intro leveling experience from 125, while it might be improved, it just hadn't gotten to the point where it was like really sticking in me. I played a little bit of PvP too. That was a lot of fun. But I think if I'm ever going to dive into it again, I think I'm just going to use my level 25 boost and start straight from the Taken King stuff.
It might be worth it. If it's not for you from the beginning, it might be worth just diving into the Taken King stuff. But,
yeah.
So it didn't do it for you from the get-go. That's okay.
Don't get me wrong. It was still a lot of fun. I enjoyed the shooting and that stuff. I think that around the same time was when Metal Gear Solid 5 was coming out, so I decided to deep dive into the Metal Gear series for the very first time.
You chose your camp.
Yeah, well, I started and started playing 1, and now I'm like part of the way through 4, so I haven't even started Metal Gear Solid 5 yet. So
wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So, yeah, I guess, I mean, you know, it's funny. I've had some people, I think a majority of the people who ended up buying the game because of mine and others' recommendations, I'm talking about Destiny again, were happy with it. Some people weren't. And it's funny, they were kind of half apologetic, half saying, you know, I don't get it. And I answer to those guys and girls, you know, it's okay. Not everyone is going to like every game, and it's fine. Mm-hmm. It's no problem. You don't have to. It's kind of like they don't understand why they don't like it, or maybe they're missing something. Sometimes you just don't like it. For example,
yep.
I don't think I'm a client of Fallout, and I think a lot of people just gasped just now when I said that. So
yeah, I think. Just to talk about Fallout real quick, I played like a couple hours of Fallout 3. I was streaming it, and it was fun, but it wasn't like something that really grabbed me. But I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the fact that it actually looks good this time. But I've played like 4 or 5 hours of it, of Fallout 4, and I'm just in love with it already. So
okay. All right, well, we'll talk about that a little bit later. But for now, let's get into BlizzCon. We're going to talk about Overwatch, WoW, Hearthstone, HOTS, the other HOTS, and I guess, or LOTV, and Diablo a little bit. But first, the Warcraft movie trailer. I think there's a lot of... it was presented for the first time there. There's a lot of ambivalent feelings. Mm-hmm. I think the surreal nature of it is turning a lot of people off or making a lot of people uncertain about what they're going to think. What did you think about the trailer?
I liked it, but I'm a huge fan of WoW, so I'm a little bit biased in that. But I thought it did kind of come off. There was a little bit of Uncanny Valley going on, just a little bit. But honestly, I'm really excited for the movie, and nothing can really stave that.
Yeah, I guess I'm a little bit like you. I did expect the game to look... It feels like it's sort of a midway between the cinematics from the cinematics team at Blizzard and an actual realistic movie. And it is kind of weird to have those two mixed. It's definitely... But I think they're not going for a realistic look in the sense that Avatar has a realistic look. They're not trying to portray this as... you know, realistically as possible, how these creatures will look in real life. There's some kind of fantasy element to it. And I think it's going to be interesting. Hopefully, once you get into the movie itself, you forget about that difference and you just enjoy the fantasy for what it is. But I personally like it. And obviously, I'm going to go see the movie. But
I'm a huge Warcraft fan in general, so it's going to happen.
Who isn't? Well, some people might not be, but even those, I suspect, if you're a gamer, you're probably going to go watch the movie. Overwatch, a couple of very big news. The first one was that obviously everyone was expecting it to be a free-to-play game. It isn't. It costs 40 euros on PC, and there's a special edition, an Origins edition, that costs 60 euros on PC, Xbox One, and PS4, which also is, which also means that it's coming out on consoles, which that wasn't a big surprise. The Origins edition has a bunch of skins, a bunch of stuff for other Blizzard games, including a Tracer character for Heroes of the Storm. Overwatch. Are you in the beta? Following it? Okay.
But I have been following it, so I'm really excited to play it whenever I get in the beta, but. Actually, the pricing structure was not surprising to me at all. I had kind of an inkling that they were going to go with a pay to play or whatever you want to call it.
I think pay to play is the term we've stopped on now.
Yeah. So the way that Heroes is structured didn't make sense for free to play and where you pay for Heroes, at least at the start. So I have a feeling that they're going to open some sort of store. Whether they sell Heroes and that is kind of unclear at this time, but definitely sell skins and things like that. But yeah, the pricing structure seems reasonable to me. $40 for the base edition, that sounds awesome. I mean, getting people in on a lower price point than the $60 price point sounds good to me.
Yeah, it seems a little bit pricey for $60 for what is basically a competitive, only PvP shooter. Traditionally, you need a solo element to the game to sell it on consoles. But for me, I have been completely engrossed in Overwatch. I think if you remember how ecstatic I was about Destiny a couple of months ago, that's how I am now about Overwatch. Uh-huh. It is such a fun game. And I'm not traditionally a PvP shooter, FPS guy. And I said that a couple of weeks ago on the previous episode, but I'm having so much fun. And the new characters that were announced and released are so cool. And, I think I'm trying to understand why I enjoy the game so much. And I think one of the reasons might be that it allows you to embody the fantasy that each character represents very well. If you're, the flying mech security person with the rocket launcher and the rocket boosters, you're going to be playing that character and no other character is going to feel the same. There's a very unique feeling about that thing and it plays like it should play out in your mind. If you're playing the cyber ninja, you're going to be, throwing shurikens for a lot of the game. But then you get in and you take out your sword and you're deflecting all kinds of bullets and getting in close and going through the opponent with your sword. And, it feels incredibly appropriate for that character, and it plays like you think it should play. Similarly with, there were a couple of other characters, Mei, which sort of freezes enemies and raises an actual, like, a wall of frost in the levels, which is insanely cool and fun to do. There's D.Va, which is a mech-driving Korean StarCraft 2 or StarCraft champion girl, and she can throw the mech and make it explode. Basically, there's an auto-destruct that is insanely fun to do when you understand how it works. It's just pure fun. And the games are 5 to 10 minutes long, so even if you lose, it doesn't take too long for you to lose, and you're still feeling like you're contributing most of the time. There's a lot of the support and tank heroes that play a huge role. I mean, I think it's a really well-rounded game, and I honestly can't wait until more people can play it. You mentioned the question about the business model going forward after that original edition. They a lot of people wanted them to say how it's going to be, and they didn't. And some people thought it was because they were being cagey and they didn't want to say whether or not they were, what they were going to sell. Was it going to be expansions? Was it going to be additional heroes? And I think they honestly, you know, they have ideas, of course, but I honestly think they haven't decided. Having experience in the company and knowing how these things work to an extent, I mean, I don't know for sure, but I honestly think they haven't decided for sure. I'm sure they're going to sell stuff. Skins is almost a given. I think there was even a kind of leak from a product page on a Battle.net site that mentioned in-game purchases or something like that. That is almost a given. The big question is about heroes, and are they going to sell heroes in some form or another, or are they going to be just selling cosmetic stuff? I think now that you have a basic roster of heroes that can do anything you need to do, I think it would be definitely possible to add heroes for pay. I just don't know if they're going to do it or not. Maybe it's going to be expansions. Maybe I don't know. But that was the big question, I guess.
Yeah, I think from what I can just kind of feel, I have a feeling that they're just going to release expansions, and which will have the additional heroes in there. And then whatever kind of microtransactions they will be doing will be completely cosmetic.
So it would be, yeah, expansions for heroes. Mm-hmm. It's possible. It does splinter the player base to an extent, but it's not like you can't play the game if you don't buy the additional heroes. And if they do their job well, it's not going to be unbalanced. It's just going to be different types of heroes. So we'll see, but it's a delicate balance to strike. They also announced there was going to be cinematic shorts from the cinematics team at Blizzard, and that looks awesome. There's one on the origins of Winston, the giant ape. He's so cute when he's a baby, and a bunch of stuff. They also announced something, basically confirmed something, which made a lot of people unhappy, is the fact that there's no Mac version.
Yeah, that was surprising to me.
They didn't give a clear explanation. What they said was the state of the Macintosh ecosystem basically is not conducive. I'm paraphrasing, but not conducive to a good experience. And I think what it means is it doesn't work because so many Macs have very low power graphics card nowadays. So I think that's the reason. But it didn't stop there before. I've installed Bootcamp, you know, Windows through Bootcamp on my MacBook Pro. It's a 13-inch Retina from this year, so it's a recent one, but it doesn't have a discrete graphics card. On Windows, on Bootcamp, the game runs. The drivers aren't great, so I'm guessing it doesn't run as well as it could, but it runs on low settings at about 30 frames per second, but low settings is not pretty.
Yeah, I'm sure.
So yeah, there a lot of people angry, you know, a lot of people are, there was someone who came to the Q&A and said, you know, I'm not a gamer, I'm a Blizzard gamer, and I'm on a Mac. And I think a lot of people feel that way, but unfortunately, I don't see the Mac version happening. So you can still buy a console. Soon. Yeah, yeah, maybe at some point, but you can still buy it on console. There's no PC to console crossplay though. That makes it interesting for esports. Is the PC going to be the esports platform, or are they going to have multiple leagues?
I would have to guess the PC would be the esports platform. The no PC consoles crossplay makes perfect sense to me. I mean, the people playing keyboard and mouse against people playing on the console on a controller could potentially cause balancing issues.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. What I would hope that they would have would still be a synchronization of the Battle.net account level. Like, they're certainly going to add game modes and character progression and stuff like that, and, you know, daily quests and these kinds of things, I'm guessing. I would hope that the character levels and all of that transfer from console from version to version, even if you can't play one against the other, because I would like to be able to have my, you know, to play on my PlayStation when I'm somewhere and play on my PC when I'm somewhere else. But they haven't confirmed that.
Yeah, I mean, with Diablo, they didn't do that. They had, their characters were completely separate on the console versions, But at the same time, I think Diablo is a little bit more complicated as far as transferring over the character data between the two different. So I wouldn't be surprised if there was some sort of way to sync your characters, whether it's syncing just your purchases and you're able to play, like, have your Widowmaker extra skin or whatever on your both versions, or if there's some sort of level up system, whether they add those two.
Yeah, I think on Diablo especially, the versions were not exactly equivalent. It wasn't, yeah, you know, the patches on the at the same time and all of this. So maybe on Overwatch, which was thought from the get-go as a console game as well, maybe they're going to make this possible, but we'll see. They did address the question of different modes, though, and they said that they've tried different things, and some of the traditional game modes aren't appropriate for Overwatch. Like if you have a capture the flag mode, you're going to have one character which has a lot of mobility, like Tracer. She's going to be capturing the flag all the time, and you're going to have six Tracers, but then it's too strong, so you have to restrict her ability to the point that she doesn't feel like Tracer anymore. So probably not capture the flag, but they did say that they're working on new modes and they're hoping to bring some to the game. They also said character progression and level, you know, player progression is a tricky thing, because if you make it so you have character levels, then people want to play that character for the level and not because you need a different character. Like if you need to be playing something else and you're close to reaching your next level with the character you're playing now, you're probably not going to switch, and that is detrimental to the team play. So they're working on other things, and hopefully,
hoping that if there's any kind of leveling system, it's mostly cosmetic, and you get all that, you have all the abilities on all the characters unlocked at the very start, and then, like, as you play, you can earn gold or whatever, so you can spend stuff on skins and things like that.
Yeah, I think it's a given that it's going to be cosmetic. I mean, the fact that they went for it would be cosmetic anyway, but the fact that they went for gameplay over a business model, I think there would have been a way to make it work on free to play, like, you know, make a number of characters accessible from the get-go, and you know, I don't know, but I don't think there's going to be like unlock an additional ability by leveling. That wouldn't make sense, because the characters work with all of their abilities as, you know, a cohesive experience. So World of Warcraft Legion, we've had a bunch of additional pieces of information, and the cinematic. What did you think of the cinematic?
It was incredible. I mean, it didn't hide the fact that it was trying to throw back to the cinematics, like the Wrath of the Lich King cinematic. It threw back there with the script and stuff like that, but man, watching Varian, Sylvanas go at the demons and team up together was awesome and amazing, and I'm really looking forward to kind of seeing why and how they managed to form some kind of pact to work together. But man, I was really worried at the very end that they were going to kill off Varian in the cinematic, which would have been insane, but man, every time I see those cinematics, I'm just blown out of the water. I love them so much. So,
I was watching it live with the virtual ticket, and I had a few people. I was streaming basically my reaction to the opening ceremony. We were watching it together with a bunch of people on stream, basically. And yeah, when they did that, and I hope by now you've seen the cinematic. If you haven't, what are you doing? But yeah, when you think that Varian is going to die, I was like, I had my head in my hands. I was having palpitations. It was insane. And the quality of that thing is so high. It's really mind blowing what they're managing to do. Now, obviously, the game itself is very different. But I think there's a lot to like in that new version of WoW. It's no secret that, you know, people are playing less, especially now that there's basically no content. I forgot to say, Overwatch release window spring 2016, so before June 21st, and I'm guessing that they have it targeted for, let's say, March 2016, and that they're giving themselves some leeway, and because there's always delays. So yeah, that's Overwatch for WoW. It's gonna come out in summer, so before September 21st, 2016. That's a long time away, you know.
Yeah, I mean, the 6.2 just came out in June. Well, not just, but came out in June, and so it. If they wait till September, that would be the longest time between the last content patch and the new expansion. And that includes Myst, which was 13 months. That's crazy.
Yeah, I don't think they're going to wait that long. I think, again, they're giving themselves some leeway in case they don't come out when they hope they will, which could be, you know, June or July. And, you know, we've seen a lot of character deep dives on the blog, which I suspect means the beta is just around the corner, maybe in a few weeks after Thanksgiving. But what I take away from the presentations at BlizzCon is I think they're doing really well on refocusing on what the core game is. They have a focus on dungeons with a new type of challenge modes, which basically you have the dungeons, then the heroic dungeons, and then the challenge modes, which are accessed with a kind of a keystone, which makes it kind of like a greater rift in Diablo.
There's a lot of things that reminded me of Diablo, but the challenge mode dungeons look really cool. I mean, when I did challenge modes in WoW, and the fact that they were timed and you had to basically rush through them as quickly as possible to get to the end kind of turned me off to playing them over and over again. The only reason we did in Myst was to sell them for other people to get the gear. And and the thing is that now, since the rewards are all weapons, not everyone is all excited about just getting a single weapon as their transmog. So, I mean, we haven't been able to sell them as much as we did in Myst, but I'm looking forward to the differences and stuff like that. So dungeon challenge mode, as you mentioned here, it could be an alternative to raiding and something that someone could do for 15 minutes one day, and then they get a piece of gear, and that's their time investment that they put into the game to get better gear, which is it's awesome. I mean, I'm really looking forward to going in and different affixes and being them dropping fire on the ground after they're dead. Just sounds awesome.
I think those affixes are a key part of it. The keystones, you increase their power and the dungeon becomes more and more difficult as you increase the power of the keystone that you found. Mm-hmm. And those affixes can really change the way you approach it. So you can have, you mentioned dropping fire after they die, or an enrage on some monsters that basically it changes the properties of the dungeons, making them more and more difficult, and the rewards are, you know, equivalent to the difficulty, so it can be really fun. I think it's going to need coordinated teams,
definitely.
But basically making the dungeons a core part of the game again, it's kind of, all right, we've had the farm, we've had the garrison, we've had this and that, now we're doing quests, going into the dungeons, and that's what we do, and raid, of course. But the quests, they're also going to be, the leveling experience is not going to be constrained by zones. You're going to be able to go anywhere, and it's going to scale with your level, which I think is a smart move. You can just give people more choice. And then you're going to have the end game zone, which is level 110, which is Suramar, where you can go. It's also going to scale with your friends. If you have a friend who's a much lower level than you in that expansion, you can go quest in a different zone, and you're going to be appropriate for that zone, both of you at the same time. That's kind of cool. The daily quests are not exactly daily quests. They're more like Hearthstone or Heroes of the Storm daily quests. There's people who come in to, there are emissaries that come into your glass hole, and you can have three of them at the same time, or one of them is going to stay for a week. So you don't have that feeling that you have to go in every day to complete your daily quests. The Demon Hunter seems super fun. He has a double jump and a kind of a glide and a rush. And, you know, it's so much to talk about. I'm really looking forward to seeing what Legion makes of WoW. And I'm certain I'm going to come back for, you know, at least a few months as I do now for these expansions. They also mentioned they're down to 5.5 million subscribers. That's down 100,000 from the last number, which is less than I would have thought. And the subscriber numbers are not going to be given out anymore. So that's it. We're not going to be, they're not going to live and die by the numbers of active subscribers they have, which they've been trying to get away from it for a long time. But
yeah, and I can understand it from a business perspective. I'm a little disappointed because that was something, transparency thing that I always enjoyed, because it was always nice for me to know the state of the game based on the subscriber, but I can understand it from a business perspective, so I'm not too hung up on it.
Yeah, that's always the thing, you know. Oh, they're less than the 12 million they were 5 years ago, and you're like, yes, but and I think as things keep going, it's not surprising that the game, it's probably going to go back up a significant amount when Legion comes out. And then it's going to dip back down, probably even more than the 5.5 million. So it's always going to be that if they kept giving out the numbers, it would be the constant downslope of, the WoW is not what it used to be. Now it's just going to be, people are still going to assume, but...
And I don't know, maybe if they didn't make such a big deal of it at each quarterly earnings, maybe if it was yearly, then it wouldn't be as bad, but them not doing it anymore is just a little disappointing to me, that's all.
Yeah, I think they're going to be giving probably active Battle.net accounts or a different kind of metric, probably. Right. And those numbers are going to be a lot bigger, obviously, because... you know, you include everyone.
And the way they said it, it was that it's not that we're not going to ever give them out anymore. It basically sounds like if we're up, then we're gonna tell you about it. But if we're down, we're not going to.
Yeah, it's possible. Hearthstone, there's a new adventure that was announced, and that was made available like in the few days
Thursday.
After. Yeah, Thursday. It's the League of Explorers. It's super fun and cute. There are a bunch of different characters. It's I love Finley McMurgleton, which is an explorer murloc. How awesome is he? There's a new keyword. The keyword is discover, which is an interesting concept. I'm not sure. I wasn't sure how it was going to work out. But you can have a keyword, for example, on a card, which is discover a card that costs one mana. And when you play it, it's going to show you three cards that are appropriate for your deck or the opposing deck, and you're going to choose one. So it's kind of a way to include some fun randomization while still keeping it contained. I think it's pretty clever. One of the cards is completely insane. It's super fun, but it's very hard to play. The Golden Monkey replaces all of your cards with legendaries, and that means the cards in your hand and the cards in your deck. I don't think it's going to see a lot of play, but when it does, it's really fun that it happens. And I've played the first part of that League of Explorers adventure. It was actually on Saturday or Friday, and the things were happening, and I was kind of down, and I was like, okay, I'm just going to turn off the news and do something different for a little bit. And it was such a breath of fresh air and a nice moment to just relax and have that little moment in time. And it was fun. It was really fun. I really loved it. The mechanics, what they're managing to do with the mechanics of the game. I mean, there was the co-op brawl last week, which was fun. I think the UI was a little bit disappointing that you had one, the boss that the two characters were playing against was just, you know, a card changing sides on the board. and that was it. It was a little bit disappointing in that way, but the gameplay was certainly fun. And here, the last part of the first wing that has been made available is you trying to get away, to run away from the temple in which you've just stolen an artifact. And it's silly. When you see how it works, mechanically it makes complete sense, but it's so cleverly designed and put together. It's really in these instances that you understand the difference between some game designer that creates something generic and a game designer that creates something with a little bit extra, you know, with something that sets it apart. So if you haven't played Hearthstone in a while, I'd encourage you to check it out. That adventure is really fun. Heroes of the Storm. My understanding is you don't really play Hearthstone or Heroes of the Storm, right?
Yeah, I mean, I've played a little bit of Hearthstone, but I haven't even dove into Heroes at all, so...
I keep saying Heroes is not my thing, it's not my thing, it's not my thing. And again, during this weekend, I couldn't play Overwatch because I wasn't home and I only had my Mac. And, you know, I played one game on boot camp and it was depressing, so I stopped. And after Hearthstone, I was looking for something else to do to occupy my mind. And I figured, you know, my friend Scott Johnson raves about Heroes of the Storm. Jeff Canada, many other people love it. I'm just going to give it yet another try. It was maybe the third or fourth time I was trying to get to play a couple of games. And for some reason, I think I'm starting to understand it now a little bit more. And I've been playing, you know, I've played maybe 5-6 games in the past 2 days. And I'm finding the fun in there, and it's actually quite fun. So I don't know how much more I'm going to be playing, but now, full disclosure, before we started the show, I was a little bit late because I was finishing up a game that went a little bit long. So I bought a couple of heroes. I thought, you know what, I'm gonna do it. It was like the starter pack, which costs how much? Like €3, and one hero I had enough gold for. So, mm-hmm. Yeah. But anyway, they announced a new mode, the Arena, which is basically, if you know MOBAs, it's all random, all mid, kind of. It's a very small arena with one objective and everyone's in the middle. And you could choose one character out of three that are randomly selected for you. And that's a very hectic mode. We'll see how it turns out. New heroes, again, Greymane, Lunara, which is a dryad, and... the craziest character there is, Cho'Gall, which is actually one hero played by two characters at the same time. So one of them controls the Cho'Head. He's a big ogre. The Cho'Head, which also controls the movements, and he's kind of a bruiser-type character. And another player controls the Wizard Head, which is a spell caster. And it's actually a recruitment mechanic for the game. Everyone at BlizzCon and everyone who has a virtual ticket is going to get that character for free. And other players can get it if they play two games with that person who already has Cho'Gall. So I think it's a really fun idea. I'm not sure how competitive or serious the character is going to be, but it certainly seems like a cool idea. And there's also a new map, the Towers of Doom. But
I'm not sure that it'll even be used in any kind of competitive thing, because you end up having only four heroes on the map instead of five. As a result, because two players are playing one hero, so...
Yeah, but that one is very powerful. It's as powerful as two heroes, so...
Yeah. The thing is, like, coverage-wise, you lose out on a lot of coverage by only having four characters.
I guess, but it's not different from when you have Abathur, who is a specialist hero who stays in the base and who sort of hops on to another hero, so... I love how they're breaking the rules with that game and trying different fun things. Mm-hmm. So and you're not interested in trying it out at all after having seen this?
I wouldn't say that. I mean, Greymane looks really awesome. I love the ability to like kind of jump in and go all melee and then jump back and shoot your gun or whatever. So I wouldn't completely write me off on Heroes yet, but I want to.
I think the way I'm starting to understand it is that this is not a shooter type Twitch game. There's some twitchiness to it, But it's more, you know, select the target you're attacking and then select the abilities you're going to be using. And they're every, you know, 5 to 10 seconds. So it's not hectic pressing 15 million keys at a time. It's more planning things out a little bit. And I think I was approaching it more like a super hectic thing. So I don't know. We'll see. StarCraft II, they also announced the post-Legacy of the Void plans, and that Legacy of the Void expansion, which is actually a standalone. You can get it even if you don't have the other games, but it came out this last week, and they're going to have mission packs. It wasn't clear if they're going to sell those or if they're going to be free. I think
they said at the very beginning of the future of StarCraft 2 panel that they were going to, some of the things that we're going to talk about were going to be paid, some of them weren't. I have a feeling that the mission packs are going to be paid for, and you'll probably be able to pre-purchase like all three of the mission packs when the first one comes out for a reduced price or whatever. But then the other things, which we'll talk about in a second, but the arcade features, the co-op missions, things like that won't be paid for. So,
right. There are also unit skins, voice packs, stuff like that. But the mission packs is the first one is going to be Nova Covert Ops. People will remember Nova. It's 3x3 missions. So 3 packs of 3 missions. And there's the co-op missions that we've, learned about before in Legacy of the Void, which is also an interesting thing. There are 6 different characters you can play, 6 commanders. That's something that I think could be interesting for people who are intimidated by the PvP aspect of StarCraft II and who might still want to play with friends. StarCraft II is also, I mean, I ordered it basically because I want to keep my collector's edition collection complete.
Yeah.
And also I just want to have it. But yeah, so I ordered it just more because of the it's the one collection I have than because I really, really want to play it. I'm still going to play it at some point, but those co-op missions, it's just a matter of time. You know, there are so many things. We've been talking just about Blizzard for the past, 40 minutes. All of those games could be your entire life for a significant amount of time. And still there are more things and more fun things that we can look forward to in the gaming industry. And yes, I've seen your collection of collector's editions, sir. It's quite impressive as well.
Yeah, the just about the co-op missions real quick. I got a chance to play co-op missions with a friend over the weekend, and they're really cool. The fact that you like choose a different commander and you have different units and different upgrades based on the commander, and as you level them up you get new cool abilities. Most of them are from the campaign. The only problem I have with the co-op missions right now, there's only 5 missions that you can choose from.
It can get repetitive pretty fast.
Very repetitive. Mm. And there's something to be said about if you're playing, what we would used to do is we would play like 2 versus AI, like a lot. We would play just over and over again, and eventually we would get tired of it. But having 6 characters, all of which you have to level up to 15, so that's like probably close to 25-ish games, maybe a little bit less per character. That's just having the same 5 missions over and over again. I wish there was just a little bit more depth to it. But it sounds like from the StarCraft panel that I was talking about earlier that they're going to add a lot more depth. They're going to add an additional character. Faesmith Karrax from the campaign is going to be a character there, and it's going to be all about the Spear of Adun abilities that you get during the campaign. So I'm looking forward to it. I'm just hoping that they add a lot more kind of depth and more missions and stuff to it.
It's possible if they see it's getting some play there, they could add to it. Yeah, we'll see. I suspect it might not happen, but we'll see. There is also improving the PvP in a significant way. There's the Arcan mode where 2 players play the same base, basically the same unit. They're improving the MMR, giving it per race MMR, both for unranked and possibly for ranked. There's a different system for MMR transparency, a bunch of stuff. The most significant thing, though, is that for Legacy of the Void, they're reducing dramatically increasing the pace of the game significantly. It's basically, you have a lot more resource gatherers and a lot less resources in the beginning. So what it means is the games, instead of lasting about 40 minutes, they're probably going to be lasting about 20 minutes, which I think is good for the dynamic aspect of the game and the watchability of the game. And now that Legacy of the Void is out, it's only the game that is going to be played in StarCraft. And I don't know if you've watched the finals of the StarCraft II Championship, the World Series. It that last game between Life and SOS was crazy. Yeah.
I'm not a huge esports all the time watcher, but I do like watching the finals of all the games that are at BlizzCon, just to kind of watch what the top people can do. I'm not a big StarCraft PvP person. I mostly, like I mentioned, mostly like to play 2v AI, but one thing they did mention is that if you're a random player with a separate MMR pro race, the idea is that the game would know what race you are going to do before they matchmake you. But everything in the UI would still display as random, so you don't actually know till you're actually in the game. But the game would be able to match you appropriately based on what the role is there. So
that's cool too. Yeah.
Yeah.
If you want to watch those finals for, I like Hearthstone and StarCraft. I watch them occasionally, not a lot, but definitely the finals. It's at blizzcon.com. You don't need a virtual ticket to watch the esports stuff. Diablo got kind of the short end of the stick. There was no big announcement. Patch 2.4, it's a bunch of content, one new zone, two expanded areas, the set dungeons, which give you stuff to do when you have gathered a complete set, tons and tons of new bounties, the bounty grounds, which honestly I don't even remember what they are, but I remember they sounded like a cool thing, a revamp to some of the UI, a bunch of stuff, but it's not a big announcement. I'm guessing we might get something big next year, maybe another expansion.
I was really thinking with how little there was, I thought there was to talk about WoW and StarCraft with those two expansions, that we were going to get a huge Diablo drop. But mostly, I felt like this BlizzCon was pretty well balanced on all the games. They kind of talked about every single one pretty equally. So
yeah. And then there's something that wasn't at BlizzCon, but apparently they're hiring engineers to, quote, restore StarCraft, Warcraft 3, and Diablo 2 to glory. So making them playable on the modern systems in a proper way. It some people even whispered something about a HD version of revamped graphics. I don't think that's going to happen. I just think they're looking for people to make sure that the games run properly on Windows 10, basically.
Yeah.
And that's going to be it for BlizzCon. Obviously, it was the biggest part of the show today. It's really something, it was the first time I didn't go there physically in a very, very long time. I think I only missed the first one and this one. It was a strange experience to watch it from afar. I missed being there, of course. I think I might go next time. But it was also nice to not have to, be on a plane for 12 hours and come back 3 days later. So, but it was definitely, I did miss it, and I was very jealous of my friends who were there. But, I've been there 7 or 8 times already, so... and then the Nintendo Direct happened last week, and that was, as I mentioned, the first one since Satoru Iwata unfortunately passed away a few months ago. There wasn't anything incredible. There was a bunch of Zelda. They just mentioned that the Wii U version of Zelda is still coming out in 2016, that it will have amiibo functionality, whatever. And they didn't mention anything about the Nintendo NX, of course. But then there's Twilight Princess HD on Wii U. There's Phantom Hourglass and Spirit Tracks on Wii U. They're very old DS games.
Yeah.
But the thing that sort of got me the most, not even excited, but I think was the most significant piece of news for Zelda was Hyrule Warriors, the game that came out on 3DS. I'm sorry, on Wii U, is coming out, as we knew, as a 3DS version called Hyrule Warriors Legends. And it will include a kind of a female Link called Linkle.
Yeah,
which
I
think it's cool, but...
It was cool. It was cool watching her... her do all her attacks and stuff, that she has instead of the spin attack, she has a spin kick where she basically jumps up on and does a handstand and then spins around and kicks all the enemies around. So the little bit of Hyrule Warriors that I have played was a lot of fun. I'm kind of disappointed that Zelda stuff is particularly only for the 3DS, but I think it is coming out to all 3DS systems, not just the new 3DS. So
yeah.
At least it has a pretty wide net there. So maybe I will buy it and try it out on 3DS. I do think the gameplay style definitely lends itself more to mobile than it did the AAA console crowd. So.
You know, first of all, I think Linkle might show up in other games and possibly in Hyrule Warriors on Wii U. I think that would be surprising. Especially, mm-hmm. You know, it was so weird to see Nintendo actually get on the bandwagon of, you know what, maybe we are lacking some female characters.
Maybe Zelda... Zelda is a girl.
It was basically making people, Zelda, you know, theorists crazy, because obviously the joke has always been, what if Zelda was a girl, when obviously the hero of the Legend of Zelda games is usually Link, which is a boy, and Zelda is the princess that he usually has to rescue. So it's just funny. But, you know, just to make a quick aside, it's very heartwarming for someone like me to see how much the controversy about female representation in gaming has been taken to heart by many developers, and some of the most unlikely developers like Nintendo, and that they're not making a big deal out of it at this stage. They're just, you know, just paying attention to the fact that maybe they should have a little bit more female characters that are a little bit more appropriately dressed, usually, and that can be also badass. And that's it. That's all that there is to it, right?
I think Nintendo's approach to Hyrule Warriors is, we can do whatever we want. We don't have to fall into the hero Link with the green hat saves the princess like they do in the main games. They can just kind of do whatever they want, and who cares about the rules of the Zelda universe there.
Yeah.
So I appreciate it. And like I mentioned, Linkle is a badass. She can kick ass just as much as any of the other characters in that game. And there are Zelda is in that game, Ruto is in that game. So there's plenty of female characters that that are really good and really awesome to play as. So if you're looking for that in your Nintendo game, I definitely would give it a try.
Yeah, and you know, even beyond Nintendo, we've seen Assassin's Creed Syndicate has a female protagonist. We have, obviously, Rise of the Tomb Raider. We have Overwatch has a lot of, not just female characters, but very, you know, different kinds of female characters and appropriately dressed again. Many of them are, even if you have some of them that are sexy, it's cool. It doesn't matter, as long as it's not the only thing that you see. So I think that whole debate and that all of that ugliness we had, 12 to 18 months ago has transformed into something positive. And I hope it lasts, and that it keeps not being a big deal, because it really doesn't need to be a big deal. It's just, it can be as it is this year, and it doesn't need to be anything else. It's just cool and appropriate. And, you know, it's, I think it works the way it worked out this year in most games. So, we were talking about Hyrule Warriors, which is basically a Sengoku Musou clone. It's a very specific type of game. But I mentioned Dragon Quest Heroes, I think, last time, which came out on PS4 and was a surprisingly fun game. I'm really enjoying it. Or I was until Overwatch came out. But I played about, 12 hours of that game, and it's super fun. It made me interested in Dragon Quest, and there are two Dragon Quest games coming out on 3DS next year. It's Dragon Quest VII, which came out in PS1 in 2000, and Dragon Quest VIII, which came out on PS2 in 2004. Not sure they're going to be for me, but I got interested in the Dragon Quest universe. Fire Emblem Fates is coming out in February in the US. Mother 3 on the Wii U Virtual Console. Mother 2 is a legendary game for those who know it. Bunch of other things. I'm going to go through it, and then you can tell me what you if there's something that stroke your fancy. Cloud from Final Fantasy VII coming to Super Smash Brothers. That got people super excited. I'm not a Smash player, so I didn't really, But yeah, whatever. Pokemon Picross is a 3DS game free to start. Final Fantasy Explorer coming out in January in the West. Pokken Tournament coming out in the spring. It's kind of a Tekken with Pokemon characters. Star Fox Zero has a date. It's April 22nd. It seems like it looked a little bit better than it did at E3, but I don't know if I was just expecting something horrible as I did at E3. and Super Mario Maker will have a web course, a course search on the web. That, whatever.
Yeah, and one thing I did want to mention is they also talk about Xenoblade Chronicles X, how it's coming out in December, and you can preload the game now, as well as, it was kind of weird, but they had a bunch of data packs, what they called it. But the fact that you can preload the digital version of the game right now is really cool. And even if you want to buy the physical version, you can preload some of all the data packs, and that way you don't have to download them on the first day. You can just pop the disc in and play, which is a really cool approach to the more digital leaning market that we've been hitting. I think that if it's something that's successful, I think it could really hit it off, and then we can go back to the days where you stick a game in and play it immediately versus stick a game in and wait for it to install and so I think that's really cool.
Yeah, it's basically Nintendo doing what the others have been doing for a while and getting into the modern age. Which, that's good. They've also been making efforts with that quote unquote game they announced on phones, the Miitomo, which I, as I mentioned, I think it's a way of getting their new network and system ready.
Yeah.
even more than it is a game, but
definitely.
Did we talk about Miitomo last time? I guess yeah. It's a weird thing. You send out your Mi and you tell him what you do, and it meets other Mis and they discuss, and then they come, your Mi comes back to you and tells you what other Mis have been doing. It's okay. It's a Japanese
yeah
thing.
I mean I think it could be pretty successful in Japan. I'm not sure if it'll be a thing in over here at all.
Activision. So a couple of things. First, they are creating a studio to create TV and film content. They're going to start with
Skylanders.
Thank you, Skylanders and Call of Duty. I think it could be interesting to see if they do something with Blizzard properties.
Yeah, I mean for the Call of Duty thing. I mean, they had with Advanced Warfare, they got Kevin Spacey to come in and be basically Frank Underwood, but I think it could be really good, especially as you were about to say with Blizzard. I mean, if they have the resources and time to devote to like maybe an Overwatch TV series or something like that, possibly using the cinematics team, which would be hella expensive, but I think it could be something that could be really cool. And I mean, this is kind of, we're coming into a golden age of television and film, so I'm really looking forward to what they put out.
I think the really exciting thing there is that we've had mixed results and usually bad results with game properties and video game properties
mm-hmm. yeah.
coming to the smaller or the big screen, and the reason is the people behind the original vision for the IP aren't in control of what's happening with the translation to the other medium. And here, it seems like it might be a way for Activision Blizzard, at least, to stay in control of how this is their properties are translated into another medium. On the French version of this show, a friend of mine mentioned that it's a very Japanese approach because they have a completely transmedia approach to entertainment. You know, a video game is going to be an anime, which is going to be a toy, which is going to be everything.
Right.
And in this case, they've ventured into the toy. They've basically created this toy to life, which is a ridiculous name, but toy to life category with Skylanders. And it makes complete sense that they want to venture into more of that transmedia area. So we'll see. For now, it's only Activision publishing properties, but we'll see. And talking about Activision Blizzard, they just bought, or they are in the process of buying, King for a whopping $6 billion.
Oh my goodness.
How is it possible that the creator of Candy Crush is worth $6 billion? Ed, go.
Yeah, so I looked at their stock price, and their stock price started out at $25 a share and has been continuously going down. I think
it was introduced at 18 and then rose to quickly to 23 or 25, and now it's been back to 18.
Now it's been back down, and I don't know. I'm not a super awesome businessman or whatever, but I think it might have been a mistake to get them in the middle of their falling. And I don't know, $6 billion seems insane to me to spend that much money. That's 2 billion more than Star Wars and 4 billion more than Minecraft. And I think the problem with these developers, I mean, we have PopCap was bought by EA, and very quickly the amount of money that they made, off their games kind of trailed off, and PopCap, was a steal for that price that they bought them for, which was like in the millions of dollars and tens of millions of dollars, maybe $100 million. But anyway, much less than $6 billion. It seems insane to me that anyone would even think that $6 billion was a good evaluation for this company, but especially because they only have one real game that they know and do well. But that being said, having a triple A huge development house that they can put their properties, possibly push them off on the mobile, some of them. I think that's probably more likely to happen on the Activision properties rather than the Blizzard properties, but it definitely seems like a possibility. And there's also to be said, because King is a British developer, there's like tax implications, and you actually save a lot of money by not having to move, basically pull the money that you make in Europe, pull it into the US, and then spend it there. Instead, you spend it by buying a company that's in Europe.
So there is
some benefit to that, and I think that's the primary reason why when we're looking at it, we see they're spending $6 billion on this, but they might be saving $2 billion on taxes by spending it directly on something that's in Europe.
Yeah, so. Exactly. I think you hit the nail on the head there. So if I get it correctly, they're spending $3 billion and having $3 billion in debt to make that purchase. And out of those $3 billion they're spending, if they had to bring that money back to the U.S., they would spend a lot of that in tax, I think something like 30%, so about $1 billion. Take those numbers with a grain of salt, but it's the general idea. And so there's that, you know, that's already something that is a huge factor in the fact that they're paying that company for so much for that company. There's also the fact that all of those other, mobile gaming companies are one-hit wonders for sure.
Yep.
I mean, you look at Supercell, which is mainly Clash of Clans, a couple of others, you know, Heyday, stuff like that, but still it's mainly Clash of Clans. You have Rovio, which is absolutely only Angry Birds. But King, it seems that they are about 30% Candy Crush. So that's not as much. We only hear about Candy Crush, but it seems they have a whole lot of other properties that they're making a lot of money out of. It's not just Candy Crush. On the other side of the deal, you have Activision Blizzard, where I think a lot of the developers at the studios actually don't want to work on mobile games kind that, you know, King exactly. does. So it's not like they could have just said, all right, from now on, you, Treyarch, you know, or, you know, Team 5, you go work on Candy Crush 2, or you go work on a Match 3 game or an Endless Runner game. They don't want to do that. So that's something that is somewhat important to remember as well, because they're buying expertise with King. They're buying the number one or number two or whatever actor in the market, and they immediately have that expertise to translate their existing games into a market that they absolutely need to be in, or I guess they don't need to, but they want to be in, which is the mobile market, which is very important right now. And they wouldn't know how to make games that work in the mobile market, and apparently King does. We're not counting Hearthstone in this. It's a different beast. There's also, to an extent, I think, the fact that the Apple TV relies on these types of games, and it seems in the first 2 or 3 weeks that the games are selling well on the Apple TV. They're making, they're topping the charts right now. And the fact that in the developing world, very often, that's someone who sent a comment on Daily Tech News Show, Marlon from Trinidad. He mentioned something that we didn't really take into account. In the developing world, there is no other platform. You know, a lot of people are mainly playing with their mobile devices. So that's what they game on. And they're quickly becoming a more and more important part of the gaming industry. So I think it's a combination of many different reasons that make this deal make sense when it seems like it doesn't initially. And to be honest, I'm still not sure it does. But if it does, I'm guessing those are the reasons. But
yeah, and I think
$6 billion.
Their introduction into into other markets, like you said, is something that is a good investment, because while right now the mobile might be the only platform that they can use in those markets, in the future it could be something that they can now sell Call of Duty to and stuff like that. And another thing to be mentioned is that you still have people playing PS2s in Brazil right now, right? So it could be something that now once they get to a point where they can afford things like Xboxes and things like that, then they could instantly have customers.
Mm. You know, I'm after all this, I have to admit, I wouldn't say no to I think that's the title I mentioned in my French show, a Raiders tower defense game. I would pay more attention to it. But yeah. I guess we're not the target for those types of developers, you know, for Candy Crush, but for King. But, you know, Activision Blizzard, now they have Activision Publishing, Blizzard Entertainment, the esports division, the studios, and the mobile division with King. That's an empire that they're building. It's pretty impressive, especially since a few years ago, Bobby Kotick bought basically the company back from their previous owner, Vivendi, almost completely. And he's building it into something incredible. So,
yeah, I mean, it's huge. I mean, I wouldn't be... It's kind of becoming a new Vivendi in a way, you know, with all all their different kind of arms that they have reaching out to different markets and stuff. It's smart. Bobby Kotick, while some people like to make fun of him for being being liking money a lot, but he's a smart businessman, and I think he's doing something really, really well with Activision Blizzard.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. There's definitely, and you know, Call of Duty Black Ops 3 is getting some pretty good reviews, and I think there's definitely some, you know, he does it more for the money than for the art, for sure. But it can't be said that he's not a smart person. He's probably the person who's been in the industry the longest, and he's been navigating this very well. So Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to quick news before we finish up with the releases of the last couple of weeks. First of all, it seems SteamOS has even less reasons to be your platform of choice now. Ars Technica conducted a bunch of tests that showed the games perform significantly worse on SteamOS, which is Linux-based, than on Windows. And the reason seems to be that the drivers are a lot less optimized on Linux, because obviously there are a lot less gamers on it, and that means the manufacturers have less interest in spending time optimizing drivers. But it can be pretty dramatic. You have like 30-40% frame rate drop from between Windows and SteamOS, so really difficult to justify buying a Steam machine right now.
Yeah, I mean, personally, I wouldn't go for it. You can spend the same amount of money and get the same kind of games on your Xbox or PS4, or even go a little bit more and get a decent PC. But I think it's something that we could look for in the future when they actually get all their optimizations done. I mean, Windows has had years and years of optimizations done in a way that that SteamOS coming right out of the gate just can't beat. But something to be said with SteamOS being a smaller kind of thing and something that could be very easily iterated on versus Windows.
Maybe. And if Valve wants to, I think they could help with the optimization of the drivers. I'm not sure their heart is fully into it at this point. You know, we've mentioned a couple of times that they started the SteamOS initiative as a tool to counter Windows having more of a proprietary approach with the Windows Store and stuff like that. Gabe Newell was afraid he was losing control on the Steam platform and it could be bypassed by the Windows Store. That was a few years ago. Things haven't gone Microsoft's way with Windows 8. And so they've been playing nice with the game industry on PC, which means SteamOS is not that much needed anymore for Valve. Maybe they're going to work on it. You know, maybe they are going to help the manufacturers improve the drivers on Linux, but I'm not sure they will. And it's always the issue of there's a small market. It's not really financially interesting, and it's the vicious circle. So I don't know. We'll see.
Yeah, I think that their focus with SteamOS is now less of a trying to kill Windows as the main gaming operating system, and more as a way to get people to play Steam on their TVs with like big picture mode and stuff like that. So
yeah, but people can do that on Windows machine and they're going to have better performance and better game selection.
Yeah, I mean, they can, but not everyone has a computer that's right next to their TV. So.
Well, if you're going to buy a Steam machine, you're buying a computer. You could have on SteamOS or on Windows.
Yeah.
But, yeah. Anyway, we'll see what happens with SteamOS. I'm not very hopeful. Unfortunately, it's a nice project. League of Legends is receiving its biggest update since the game was launched. I don't know League of Legends very well, but apparently it involves, you know, a client update at last, a dynamic group queue. There's character selection changes. There's a mastery path for the characters. I'm just reading features here. I'm not familiar with the game, but apparently it's a big deal. So if you're into League of Legends, maybe go check it out. Dragon Quest Heroes, which I talked about just a little bit earlier, is coming to Steam possibly in 2016. It's on PS4 exclusive for this year, but there was a leak that makes it likely that it's going to come out on Steam. And as I mentioned, it's a really fun game, so you might want to put it on your list for a potential sale later down the line. The EA Sports cover curse has worked again. We were talking about female empowerment a little bit earlier, and for the first time on EA Sports UFC, it's basically the second game, UFC 2, we're having a female character on the cover, not a character, a female fighter on the cover. It's Ronda Rousey, and unfortunately she lost her her game in the current championship mm-hmm. For the first time in like forever. She was, I think everyone knows Ronda Rousey at this point. She's so prevalent and such a powerful character that everyone likes. You know, whoever you are, you're probably thinking, yeah, she's badass and she would kick anyone's ass. And she's become very public. But
I saw Mizu on Twitter saying that the odds were 8.5 to 1. Like 8.5 1 for Ronda Rousey or whatever, but basically people that bet money got 8.5 return on if they bet against Ronda Rousey. So
yeah, but you know, aside from that, I think it's really cool that she's on the cover of the game, and she's just a cool person. I don't know if you've heard interviews with her or her approach to things is very cool, and she's very active and you know in her approach to all of this. So, and it's cool that we have an actually, and you know, she's very strong, she's very badass, and she's actually pretty, which helps. You know, she has everything going for her. So she's like the kind of a Daniel Craig version of a female Daniel Craig, except I guess Daniel Craig can actually beat someone to a pulp with his bare hands. The Witcher is coming to theaters. There was a TV show that was very cheap done from the Witcher property, but apparently they're making a movie out of it.
Hey, that's cool. I love the Witcher universe, so just more in it sounds good to me.
And the respect that CD Projekt has for their fans is inspiring. Yep. So I hope they will helm the movie as well in the same way. Just so a quick reminder, but numbers for The Witcher 3. The numbers were 6 million sold in 6 weeks. And we've had numbers for Fallout, which has shipped. It's not sold, but it's only physical copies. 12 million copies in one day. So, yeah, Fallout is definitely a success. We're transitioning to the releases of the past week or so. Fallout has been watched by 250,000 people on Twitch, 440,000 concurrent players on Steam,
which beat out Dota. I think it was everything but Valve games. So, it beat out every single game on Steam for concurrent players ever, except for like Dota 2, which has millions of people playing all the time.
So you've been playing it. You just played the beginning, right? You've played a few hours, and you're loving it already.
I dove into it. I played the first section, basically all the way up until you walk out of the vault.
So it's really the introduction.
But you know that was the very beginning, and then I stopped for a little bit, and then I dove back in, and I've completed the first two or three quests, and I just started getting the part where you build your base up, and man, that's something that I have a feeling I'm going to be spending a lot of hours in, just placing beds around the thing and building up houses. And but yeah, it's a lot of fun so far. You get the power armor right at the beginning, and it's not just a cosmetic thing like it was in 3 in New Vegas. You actually like get into it, and you're more protected and stuff like that. It's really cool. The shooting is significantly better than it was in Fallout 3, to the point where in Fallout 3 I felt like I had to use VATS almost all the time. I was playing very early in the game, so I didn't have a lot of skills yet. But in Fallout 4, I use VATS plenty of times.
Can you quickly explain what VATS is?
So VATS, in Fallout 3, it was you pause the game and you were able to choose where on the enemy you could shoot. And you had different percentages based on how likely it was for you to kill or land the shot, and or even having a melee weapon hit the thing, hit the enemy. But in Fallout 4, they go into slow-mo, which is a little bit nicer, because in Fallout 3, when you go into VATS, everyone was frozen. So if there was anything like blocking them, you would have to just close out of VATS and reopen when they move. So with 4, they slow down and you're able to line up your shots and choose where to shoot quickly and easily. But like I was kind of hinting at was, I don't know if it's 100% necessary anymore. I mean, I'm able to land shots.
So you're saying it's more
shots.
It's more action. I think that that would scare people who are, you know, fans of the RPG type, because especially for Fallout, it's a very RPG thing that people who like the original ones, or at least three, are like that it's slow and that you can take your time and do whatever you want. What you're saying is it's more action-oriented.
Well, so you can play it however you want, right? So you can use VATS all the time if that's what you want to do. My point is that there's a downtime where you use up all your ability points and you have to wait for them to recharge. And during that time in Fallout 3, you felt kind of useless. Because you pretty much had to use VATS in order to be successful in combat. In Fallout 4, you, even though you're out of ability points and you can't use VATS for a little while, you don't feel completely neutered because of it. All the RPG elements and that kind of stuff is still there. You still have the very obscure kind of... the special points are kind of like, what is this supposed to do for me? And you have the perks and stuff like that. So to a person that's really, really into Fallout, you're just going to get more great Fallout. To someone that might not have enjoyed the kind of slow-ish pace of 3 and the fact that you felt like you weren't very successful in combat, maybe you could dive right into Fallout 4 and still feel like a badass.
So. Okay. So are you a fan of Bethesda games like Skyrim? And because I loved Skyrim. Mm-hmm. I played Fallout 3 a little bit. It was on sale and didn't love it. You know, the intro is fun, but then, I don't know, it didn't grab me. A little bit too brainy. I want to smash stuff, I guess, but...
Yeah, I mean, you definitely, in Fallout 3, it felt like, at the beginning, you don't really get into a lot of combat, especially because you're doing a lot of talking, you're in that first Megaton area, and you're just kind of talking with the characters, and even when you go on your first quest, it's just you walk over to a house, you go in and you talk to a lady, and then you go back. With 4, it's definitely, you get right into combat from the very beginning, and... I'd say compare it to Skyrim. I mean, there's more combat. I think the combat's a lot nicer in Fallout than it was in Skyrim. Mostly because I felt like the combat in Skyrim was kind of clunky and very forceful in a way that didn't feel good. But I definitely say if you're a fan of Bethesda games and you're even a fan of Elder Scrolls and really wasn't looking that forward to Fallout 4, definitely give it a whirl. I mean, if you want to, you can wait until it's on sale for a cheaper price if you don't want to put a full $60 investment in. But I can already tell that it's going to be a game that I will play for a very, very long time.
Okay. And I guess a lot of people have been raving about it. Yeah. So I think it's very likely that I'm going to get it. I think we mentioned last time. I'm probably going to get it as a present, you know, for it's going to be on my wish list. So we'll see. But it's something that I'm intrigued by. And so many people are raving about it that it's difficult to stay away from it. Definitely, if you're a fan of the Fallout games, you're probably going to be playing it already. So what do I need to talk to you for? Call of Duty Black Ops 3, as I mentioned, has been reviewed surprisingly well. It's really trying to do everything for everyone. There's co-op modes. I mean, solo can be played co-op. You have the PvP, which apparently is more fun and more new than it was in previous updates. You have the zombie mode, which is very expensive. There's a bunch of stuff. I'm not sure I'm going to... I was disappointed by Advanced Warfare, so I might not get it this year. We'll see next time. And Activision is mentioning that it is selling significantly better than Advanced Warfare and Ghost, for which they didn't put out any numbers and they didn't say anything, so it might not be saying much. But it seems it's being received better than the previous versions. The PC version is a mess, though, so yeah. If you're thinking of getting it on PC, you might want to wait a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, that's not I don't know why I'm even remotely surprised, but I've always, the PC versions of the Call of Duty games in the past have always been pretty well optimized. But with the way that PC development has been going lately, I don't know. Mm. I think one of the problems is that previously, when you had to release to all three platforms, you kind of had to develop for all three platforms. Now with the new consoles being x86 and having gigabytes of RAM and stuff like that, that people they want to optimize for their market, which is to say, with Call of Duty, it is the console market. And so they just kind of do a lazy port over to the PC version. So
maybe, yeah, it's very possible. And finally, Rise of the Tomb Raider. I have ordered it. I have not received it, but it's also out. Have you looked at it?
Yeah, I played it at PAX, and it was a lot of fun. They seemed to be going a little bit deeper into puzzle mechanics and stuff like that. I am interested in it, but I think I'm going to wait till the PC version comes out in early 2016, Q1 2016, and just pass off on the Xbox version for now. Because I played the original one on the Xbox, or on the PC rather, and it went very smoothly. So I'm hoping that the PC version of this one goes smoothly as well.
Yeah, the Microsoft partnership is probably going to mean that it will be.
Exactly.
It's one of the things I've been waiting for that game for so long. And I mean, we're not a review show, so this is not intended to be reviews, and that's not what we're about, but I've been waiting for it for a really long time. I got my Xbox One just for this game, basically, more or less. And now that it's out, I have so many things to play, and that's what we were talking about. There are so many things to play right now. It's pretty amazing how, even this game, which I'm sure I'm going to have so much fun with, I'm not jumping on immediately. And I think it's going to be an excellent couple of months gaming-wise, because the first things you jump on are you're just excited with immediately, and then you play for a little while, and then you stop, you know, you slow down, and then you realize, oh my God, I also have this thing.
And you
jump into it, and then Christmas arrives, and maybe you're going to treat yourself, or someone is going to gift you a game that you didn't really want to shell out the entire price for, but then you're going to be having fun with that thing as well. It's a wonderful time to be a gamer. So
yeah, I mean, and to kind of back up on that, the next year, early 2016 releases, there's a ton of games coming out in fall, in February and March, to the point that I don't think has been a very big thing before. So we're just going to get more and more early and early in the year, and we don't have to wait till the fall season every single year to get all the really, really crazy good games. I mean, Deus Ex is coming out at the end of February, and that one looks really good, so I'm excited for that.
Yeah, and then there's Uncharted 4, and then we're diving into the VR part of the year, which is going to be crazy as well, so... Yeah, it's certainly going to be pretty exciting, and I you know, there are a ton of games that I can't wait to get my hands on. So, all right, I think that is going to be it for the show. Any parting words? Any last comment you want to make?
Go play Fallout.
that's on my Christmas wish list, so I think I'll get it sometime in end of December, and it will be a game I'll be at least trying. I'm obviously going to be trying it, so
awesome.
And on my end, I will let you know that for Overwatch, we're going to be finally recording an episode of Overwatchers, our Overwatch podcast with Garrett Weinsroll. We're going to be doing that this week because he was off getting like married, stupid marriage. And then, you know, there was BlizzCon, there was the marriage, BlizzCon, honeymoon, all of that getting in the way of us talking about Overwatch. That's unacceptable, and we're going to fix it this week. Guaranteed, we'll have an episode out where we're going to splurge on our Overwatch happiness. And hopefully we will make it enjoyable for people who do not have access to the game yet. That's what we'll strive for anyway.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to pull some strings with your old Blizzard friends and get me a beta access code, that'd be great. But it's fine. Whatever.
You know, I think you might be the first person who's asked this.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure.
And yeah, so that will be on amove.tv, which is Garrett's site. Mm-hmm. What about you, Ed? Where can we find you on the web?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at twitter.com/Adesis. That'll be in the show notes. But also, you can just kind of follow what's happening with the website stuff over at 4playernetwork.com. And we stream live every single night at 4pp.tv. And there's some cool... if you go to 4pp.tv and you're used to kind of the Twitch experience where you have the chat and the frame and stuff like that, I've done a lot of cool work on the website to kind of allow people to kind of have the Twitch experience completely on our own website in a way that's really cool. So cool. Give it a try.
Excellent. That's on 4pp.tv. Thanks very much for being on.
Of course. Thank you for having me back.
For me, it will be on Twitter. I'm Not Patrick. You can find me there. You can also find me on Facebook, Not Patrick as well. And you can find this show on FrenchSpin.com. You can also find another show called The Phileas Club. I mention it from time to time, but I think the next episode, which we'll record in about, I don't know, 10 days or so, is going to be especially interesting because we are going to be talking about what happened in Paris. And what we do in that show is that we get people from different countries, different perspectives, different cultures to talk about the way they perceived and they understood events that happened in the world in the past month. So we're probably going to get, we have shows where we might have someone from Saudi Arabia. My friend Turkey is often participating, someone from the US, someone from Asia, and we all discuss how we received the news. And in these kinds of instances where there's one event that has worldwide resonance, it's always interesting to hear. The one we did on the Charlie Hebdo attacks, I think, was a very good example of what the show can be at its best. That was back in January last year. We do shows all the time. So anyway, if you think that's something that might be interesting to you, if you like games and you also want to stay informed about other things, you can go check that out at FrenchSpin.com. The show is called The Phileas Club. And of course, you can come tell us what you thought of this current show, the show Pixels. And if we said things that didn't make sense or if you disagreed vehemently, come and let us know. You can do that in the comments as well. And either way, we will be back in a couple of weeks with a new episode of Pixels. Thanks so much for listening and see you then.
Bye.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.